Welcome to This is the Jet Life with Dan Burnham, your guide to the New York Jets, sports, and much more. And now, your host, Dan Burnham.
What is up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of This is the Jet Life. We've got a fun episode in store for today, talking offensive free agency preview. Last week we did defense, this week we do offense on March 2nd, and then in 2 weeks from today when we record again, it's going to be March 16th, dead smack in the middle of the legal tampering period for free agency, so all this stuff is going to be underway. This really is our last opportunity to talk about who Joe Douglas and the Jets could be looking at and what kind of positions and players we could be trying to improve. Free agency officially begins March 17th, that Wednesday in 2 weeks at 4 p.m. But as we know from years past, most of the deals get agreed to in terms during the legal tampering period, which begins on March 15th, that Monday. So 2 weeks, it's all going to go down. And we are going to talk offensive free agency today. I think it's a little bit more fun than the defensive side of the ball just because of the flash and the flare of the skill positions. But yeah, we're going to do that. We're going to talk about news and notes and rumors from around the league. And we got a good father time, what's on tap, all that good stuff. Lots to get to. So here we go. Before we begin, we got to remind you to rate, review, subscribe to this podcast anywhere podcasts are found. It is under the podcast title Gangrene Nation podcast series title. This is the Jet Life. You can also follow me on Twitter at Jets_Dan for more Jets thoughts and whatever opinions throughout the week. I think the other day, might have been yesterday, I tweeted something saying that last year at this time, I had a gut feeling that people did not want to come play for the Jets. Adam Gase, a big reason why, even though we had money and stuff on our side, we were going to have to grossly overpay for players that we wanted to get. This year, I don't have that feeling. I really don't. And some people, when I posted it on Twitter, kind of fired back saying, I have no idea what would make you think that. The Jets are still not a hot destination. The team still stinks. I got to see it before I believe it. But when you look at the way this team is being built, with a lot of great players, good personalities, former team captains. You look at the coaching staff that we've brought in, real team players and coaches that believe in those guys, and you've got Joe Douglas at the top, who's a person that seems to have great integrity and believe in his people as well and have a clear vision for the guys. It feels like a totally different scenario and a totally different unit to be joining. The Adam Gase thing felt like a dumpster fire that was on its way down, crashing and burning, and we were like, oh, we're going to do this one more time? All right, let's see what happens. But now, with Robert Saleh, who was, at the time, probably the biggest get for a coaching hire, and he wanted to come play for the Jets, and he wanted to be part of this, and he has said publicly many, many times that the way that the front office and everybody on the Jets approached him and talked with him and shared a vision and stuff, it was refreshing, and he loved it, and he couldn't say no to the job. And I think that when you look at that and you see, okay, that brought him on, and now we've still got that same unit that's bringing a guy like Robert Saleh, a top candidate, in. And then you've got him, who's a guy that you've heard from a bunch of players, Richard Sherman, former players, anybody who really has gotten to know him says that he's a great coach and a great, you know, a player's coach, somebody you want to be going to battle with. It just feels like a hot destination. You've heard the rumors about guys like Deshaun Watson. There's even been some rumors about a Russell Wilson potentially wanting to come to the Jets if a trade opportunity was struck. It just is a new leaf for this team, and it's not going to happen overnight. The team is probably not going to be 10-6, 11-5. I won't be predicting them to be, but, you know, a 7-win team, an 8-win team. In fact, the season is actually expected to be 17 games long, so potentially, you know, that 7-8-9-win range. Maybe not playoffs with the extra team. It's possible. But they're going to make steps in the right direction, and it's going to become a better and better destination, and we're going to shed the negative stigma that surrounds the team right now. And I think there's reason to be excited. So looking at these free agents, I don't think many of them are, you know, out of reach. I think the Jets may have to overpay for some specific players if they want to get them to leave or come to, you know, the Jets aren't going to be competing. If you're an older guy, you probably would have to overpay to come to the Jets because we're not going to be going for a ring. But I don't think that's in the Jets' real goal or strategy right now to bring in older players because we're not there yet anyway. It's to bring in young guys to help grow, and the writing's on the wall. This team is improving quickly. So we're going to begin by talking news and notes before we get into all those players, starting with the news that the NFL has set a new cap floor for 2021. We do not have an official cap set yet, but the number of 175 is the cap floor for this year has been raised to $180 million. Now, last year was $198 million, so we're still $18 million off of that. But I think that most people would assume that somewhere between that 180 to 190 range, maybe closer to 185 is where this is going to settle. And that's not too far off from where we were last year. It is probably further off than any, you know, projections that these front offices were planning for. They probably were looking closer to $210 million for this season. We're going to be coming in well short of that. So we'll see what kind of cap casualties occur because of that. I think that you would think, you know, right off the dome, you'd say this probably means people won't be signing as big a contracts. People won't be spending as much. There might be more cuts than signs for teams just trying to get under the cap. But we'll see how the NFLPA works that, tries to get some sort of credit card or extension or a way to, you know, spread that payment out so that a team can still spend X amount of money knowing that we're going to get that in future returns. Because I don't think the players want to be signing up for a year where it's like, if you're in free agency this year, it's just a shitty year to be in there because there's not enough money to go around. They're probably going to try to find a way to combat that if it is too much lower than that $198 million from last year. But the next big piece of news, J.J. Watt just signed to the Arizona Cardinals. This guy signs a two-year, $31 million deal. And this is one of the first, really is the first free agent signing big deal that we've seen yet. That's because he was cut, you know, a month ago, a couple weeks ago, whatever it was, and hit the market. And so he can sign because he's a true free agent. He can sign earlier than anybody else because he's not under contract right now. Everybody else's contract is technically void and ends if your contract is expiring. It truly ends on March 17th. His ended when they cut him. So he was able to sign. He went to the Cardinals and signing a two-year, $31 million deal with over $20 million guaranteed for a guy at this stage in his career does not really point towards teams being bashful in spending and not really wanting to go over the top in payments. J.J. Watt, I mean, this guy had five sacks this year. He played all the games. He was healthy finally. But he's getting 17 quarterback hits and five sacks the year before. Didn't play all the games. Four sacks, 21 quarterback hits. Don't get me wrong. These are some decent numbers. But back in the day, he was getting 20 sacks, 17 sacks, and getting, you know, 50-plus quarterback hits in a year. He's half of that now. And to pay this man like he's a top-tier defensive end, it just seems a little crazy to me. And apparently he had bigger offers as well that he turned down. Now, I guess they could be saying that J.J. Watt is more than the numbers that he brings. He's a mindset. He's a mentality that he brings to the team. But to see that, like, yeah, I agree that he definitely is a good locker room guy. If you're saying that the Cardinals right now have a huge personality issue and that locker room is a mess, then yeah, bringing a guy like J.J. Watt to galvanize it. But is he really going to put them over the top in terms of personality because he can bring people together? I don't know. I watched the Texans have a lot of struggling years while he was absolutely dominating. I know he's a great guy. He's a player that I love to root for. But that contract just seems out of control. And if that's a sign of things to come, if people are going to use that as precedent to then build off of, well, J.J. Watt got this contract, then we may see some bigger contracts than I was initially expecting. Next big piece of news, Deshaun Watson still hasn't been traded. We'll see what the Texans are up to. I know the Jets are still linked there. He's still an exciting candidate. But Peter Schrager and some people have put out some like mock trade packages that include multiple firsts, you know, the two from this year, Quinnen Williams and Denzel Mims, and maybe more. And it's like, listen, at a certain extent, it's just like, how many steps backwards do you need to take one step forward as Deshaun Watson? And I like the guys we got. I don't want to get rid of Quinnen. I don't want to get rid of Mims. Sure, Deshaun Watson is truly a franchise-changing player. But I think there are other ways to get there. And, you know, maybe I'm emotionally connected. Maybe I've got a lot of faith and hope in Joe Douglas and his draft ability. But it for me, when I see those trade packages, I'm like, eh, not sold. I think I'd pass. Russell Wilson, his name has been mentioned. I don't think that Russell Wilson's going to be coming to the Jets. I think that he's mentioned it here and there that, like, yeah, he wants to get out of Seattle. In the end, I would say 70% chance he returns to Seattle, probably not going anywhere this year at least until he's a free agent or, you know, has made the Seahawks a little bit more uncomfortable or they haven't protected him for another year. But the Jets, they're not really the destination that is looking like they're a Russell Wilson away. And I think for him, at the stage in his career that he's at, you know, a true veteran, polished, ready to win right now in his prime, he's probably looking for a team that's a little bit further along than the Jets. And then I think the biggest news of all news and rumors from this week, the boy, Dowell Loggins, just got hired as an offensive analyst for Penn State University. Dowell Loggins will be going to college football for the first time in his career, separating, at least at this moment, from Adam Gase. And they have been together for like five of the last 6 years. And we don't really even know Dowell Loggins without Gase. He's just always kind of appeared like he's Adam Gase's feeble henchman. But now, he gets to start over. He's still young, got a career ahead of him. So very happy to see. I know we haven't officially released Dowell Loggains in any sort of statements or anything, but he's getting a job. He's going to a nice program, Penn State, that has been struggling recently. And maybe he can turn that thing around and get his career back on track, separated entirely from Adam Gase. We will be watching and rooting for Dowell Loggains wholeheartedly as he handled the challenge flag as good as anybody we've seen over the past 2 years. So that is the big news and notes from around the league. That leaves us with the next order of business, which is offensive free agency previews. We're going to talk about every single position, but before I get into all of that, I want to do a father time because my dad has his kind of footnotes on how he'd like to handle offensive free agency, kind of like what he did last week, and I don't want to steal his ideas or anything like that, so I'm just going to let him take the floor. This is this week's father time, written by my dad on free agency offensive edition. Here we go. So there are some obvious needs on the Jets' offense and a few ways to fix them in free agency. I have certain expectations for the draft and corresponding signings for free agency. With a few cuts, the Jets will have an estimated $75 million to spend. Thank you, Joe Douglas. The offensive line made great forward strides last year, but the work is not yet done. The interior needs fixing. This will be done by signing a veteran, center, or a guard, but not both. Option one is to sign Patriot Joe Tooney for left guard. He's never missed a game. My issue with Tooney is that he's a great pass blocker, but just an average run blocker. I'm looking forward to a mauler at left guard to dominate the run game with Becton. Option two would be to sign Corey Linsley at center. He's a top center, which would push Connor McGovern from center to guard, where he began his career. This would upgrade center and guard positions at the same time. Either of these options would make the Jets' offensive line above average in both run and pass, and both would be solid additions. I expect that JD will sign Tooney. He was going to be a Jet last year until Bill Asterisk tagged him. The negotiations were close to done last year, so it's simple. Pick up where you left off and finish the deal. I also expect a veteran wide receiver to be signed. Without a decent quarterback in Chicago, Allen Robinson wants out, and I give the Jets a 50-50 on signing him. His presence will instantly change the offense for the better. The reason that I expect Robinson to sign is because Godwin will likely re-sign with the Bucs, and the Lions will likely tag Galladay. I say 50-50 because if Robinson doesn't sign, it'll be Juju Smith-Schuster, who will not have the impact of Allen Robinson, but he'll be cheaper. I like both options. The other possibility is Jonnu Smith. I'd like it, but I don't expect it. I don't expect a big running back to sign, even though I am a big Aaron Jones fan. So last is the quarterback. With all the talk, wishes, and prayers, Sam Darnold will take the first snap week one of the 2021 NFL season, and neither Fields nor Wilson present enough of an upgrade to spend the number two pick on them. I also think that Robert Saleh and Michael Floor believe that Sam can operate the San Francisco offense. Thankfully, I'm positive that Joe Douglas won't sell the ranch to bring in Deshaun Watson. Thanks again, Joe. Go Jets. End scene. So wow, as always, great father time. Thank you, Dad, and a ton to unpack here. He got a ton out in not that many words. His entire, you know, combo of prediction and wishes for the Jets in the offensive side of the ball in free agency. And I think he almost nailed it on the head here. Number one most important thing, guard. Going for that. Joe Tooney, the obvious best guard for a left guard. You can keep McGovern at center, and the offensive line is probably done. Other options, slide McGovern to guard, and then bring Corey Linsley in, who's a great center, and the offensive line, again, is basically done. Improvement in both ways. The Jets will be awesome, ready to rock and roll in this San Francisco Mike LaFleur offense. So I love that. Love both of them. There's some other guys that I could see the Jets bringing in that we'll talk about later, but those absolutely make sense. And if he's right, awesome. The next being the wide receiver position. And Allen Robinson is a guy that is very hard to pass up on because he is super talented, and he's one of those guys that instantly, like you said, will make the offense so much more fun to watch. He'll make Denzel Mims better, he'll make the quarterback better, and he clearly wants out of Chicago, so that would be great. If Godwin and Galladay aren't available, as he predicts, yeah, Juju Smith-Schuster is another great option for the Jets. Probably a little bit less expensive than Allen Robinson, definitely a little bit less talented than Allen Robinson, but still, an option to improve that position group. So I like that. Jonnu Smith, another weapon that he mentions, that's a tight end, but he could potentially be one of the guys. And then I think the most interesting thing is what his prediction was at the end, talking about Sam Darnold being the quarterback starting week one of 2021. My dad has been pretty much so far this offseason. He's kind of been leaning towards a quarterback, leaning towards Justin Fields. But I think at the end of the day, he realizes that Sam Darnold does still have potential. These guys coming out of college are not sure things. And the way that Joe Douglas thinks and prioritizes getting in young guys, you know, capitalizing on the draft, making sure you hit with guys and fill holes, the Jets aren't completely there yet with this new offense. I think it makes a lot of sense. You could easily see Sam Darnold running this offense, Joe Douglas trying to trade back from the number two pick, and then just fill up a bunch of other positions. If Sam Darnold does not work, then trying to address it with a more full and complete team put together. Now, it's not the flashiest strategy, and it's not necessarily what my dad wants to happen. It's what he thinks will happen if he had to put money on it right now. And yeah, I think that it's definitely, definitely very possible that that's what we see. Sam Darnold under center and, you know, a trade back in the draft. But we're going to have to see. Again, this is the time of year where it's all hypotheticals. Every single year at this time, it like hits me like a bag of bricks. We've been talking since January. We signed Robert Saleh, and then it's just who could possibly come here? We spend podcast after podcast talking about potential free agent targets. What would they cost? Who will we do? What will Joe Douglas's approach be? We've only seen him X amount of times. We think we kind of know what he's doing, but what is he going to do this year? Who's he going to go after? And then all of a sudden, it's just, boom, it's March 15th. Guys start signing. People start going all over, and Joe Douglas has to, you know, put up or shut up. And then we find out what was it all worth and what were we actually doing. And we're going to have a ton more clarity, but right now, it is all just ambiguous. There are not a ton of rumors. There's not a ton of people that are linked to the Jets right now. Like, oh, the Jets are going after this guy. And I expect there will be more of that as the weeks go on here, as we get closer to the actual begin of the legal tampering period. But for now, I mean, all we've got is our guesses, and his are as good as any. So I appreciate that, Father Time. Thank you very much for the submission, Dad. This week, I look forward to what you got next week, because at that point, the Jets will have new players agreed in terms. And I can't wait to see if we got the guys that he wants, we got the guys that we all want, and how the Jets are being built moving forward. So that was this week's Father Time. Now, before we move on to a preview of the offensive free agency, we have to take a quick commercial break. All right, everybody, welcome back to This is the Jet Life. We are going to talk about the offensive free agent targets that the New York Jets could be looking at, and we are going to go position by position, starting with quarterback. We're going to talk about who we have under contract right now, which guys the Jets could potentially be linked to through the 49ers or other teams, and then who potentially would be good fits to start or be backups. So we will begin with the quarterback position. Currently under contract, we have Sam Darnold and James Morgan. Sam Darnold, we know, is up in the air. That one, I mean, we have no clue what exactly is going to happen with Sam Darnold at this point. But what we do know is that one way or the other, the likely scenario is that the quarterback will either be Sam Darnold starting, a rookie quarterback, or a Deshaun Watson. That's probably 95% likely that it's one of those three things happening. So if that's the case, all we really need is a backup quarterback. The question is, James Morgan, who was drafted in the middle of the draft last year, has never played a snap for the Jets, but was a small college guy that Joe Douglas liked for whatever reason, potentially could come in here and be a backup quarterback project for the Jets. I don't know that he's ready to necessarily be the backup quarterback, so we have to look at who would fill in that role. Who would be our backup quarterback? The likes of, you know, we've seen Trevor Siemian, Luke Falk. We've seen Joe Flacco, Josh McCown, Ryan Fitzpatrick, a bunch of different guys over the years come in and be that backup quarterback option. This year, I think some guys that would be obvious would be 49ers quarterbacks that are free agents this year, Nick Mullins or C.J. Beathard, because Michael LaFleur has worked with both of these guys before, and it would be a much easier transition should our starting quarterback go down or play poorly and we need to put a backup in. Those guys at least know the system, so there's a very good chance that it could be one of them. I think that if you're looking at the style of offense that the Jets are going to be playing, the guys that I like the most would be Mitch Trubisky, Tyrod Taylor, or Jacoby Brissett. I think those guys are kind of scrambling, run-pass option type of players who can pick up yards with their legs, can, you know, play that short ball game, somewhat accurate with the ball. And then another guy who I think just like a good veteran presence, if we wanted to bring in one of those Josh McCown teacher type of guys, would be Alex Smith, who at this point, we know that he's not what he was. We also know that he's healthy enough to play and start in the NFL. So I think he's a guy that you could definitely bring in for that role as well. So looking at it, you know, we're definitely going to have a rookie quarterback, a Sam Darnold, or a star quarterback that we trade for. The question is, who's going to be the backup? I would look at Trubisky and Brissett first. Those would be my first options. but I would understand an ex-49er. There's some other guys that are available as well at the quarterback position. It really is a matter of preference for Mike LaFleur, and we know that he ran that Kyle Shanahan system. We don't know if it's exactly the same as that, what he's going to run, if it's just a variation of that, if it's similar, or if there's things that he's seen in that offense over the years and it's like, you know what, I like it, but I would love to change X. And this is his opportunity to do that. So we'll find out a lot more when free agency officially begins, who he goes after. We'll also probably find out if the Jets are leaning towards trading for a guy or drafting a guy based off who they pick up. The next position to look at is the running back position. And I think the market for these guys is fairly strong. We currently have LaMichael Perrine under contract and Ty Johnson under contract. We lost Frank Gore. We lost Josh Adams. Both of those guys are free agents and would be easily linked to coming back to the Jets. I don't think Frank Gore will because of the point of his career that he's at, how old he is. I think that Josh Adams would be a very likely guy to come back if we need one more cheap guy to fill in the back end of the roster because he's only 25 years old. He's played pretty well for us, and he's got a history with Joe Douglas and the team. But guys that you want, you know, you don't really want to start LaMichael Perrine and Ty Johnson as your number one and two running back. It obviously makes sense to draft a running back because it's so easy to find them in the draft. Running back is based off of tread on the tires, how much you've been run, how much energy you've got left. And so finding a guy who's young in the draft is often the best case scenario for you. It's one of the reasons that running back is the lowest paid position in terms of value on the field. But some guys that we could potentially look at if we wanted to break the bank per se would be a guy like Aaron Jones. My dad mentioned him. He loves him. We both do. Aaron Jones plays great football, can do everything, but he's going to be costly. And do you want to spend money on a running back? You probably don't. If you strike a good deal and the contract looks great, you might have to say yes. Another guy that you could look at, really good, Kenyon Drake, a James Conner, a Chris Carson, maybe slightly lower tier guys like Mike Davis, Jamal Williams, Marlon Mack. You got Gus Edwards. And then you got a couple 49ers like Jerick McKinnon and Tevin Coleman, who have played in the 49ers offense. You always have to, when you're looking at your free agents for the Jets this year, because we brought over so many 49ers coaches, you got to look at 49ers players that can come bring in the system. We talked last week about how Rex Ryan brought in some of his guys from the Ravens when he came to the Jets. So likely we're going to be getting some of these guys from the 49ers. The question is who. So we'll mention them with basically every single position group here. But I think when you're looking at that, you know, best case scenario, you're running a great young drafted running back. You get a Travis Etienne, you get a Najee Harris, a Kenneth Gainwell, one of these young stud guys, and you got Michael Perrine and maybe one other guy like Josh Adams and Ty Johnson in there. But if you don't want to go into the draft with a hole and a need at running back, thinking to yourself, you know, we're going to have to draft somebody somewhere and maybe reach for a guy because all of a sudden players are going a little bit earlier at this position than we anticipated. If you don't want to be in that position, I think finding one of those middle tier guys, one of those Gus Edwards, a Marlon Mack, if you could get a good deal for Chris Carson, I think all of that would make sense. So not a position like my dad that I think that we will necessarily go after. It definitely is a position that we will need to improve on before the season begins, probably through the draft. But being that the market for these guys is so strong and there are so many running backs available, it is one that Joe Douglas could probably reach out to like 5-6 guys and say, hey, what would you play for? What would you play for? And if he finds a really good deal for one of these guys that maybe has a smaller market, you could pull the trigger. Next position, fullback. I think that the Jets need a fullback. When you look at Kyle Shanahan's systems, which is what the Jets are basically going to be running a version of, they have always, always employed a great fullback. When Kyle Shanahan came to the 49ers, first thing he did, overpaid for Kyle Juszczyk to get him there. The highest paid fullback in NFL history, Kyle Juszczyk, years ago, what, 3 or so years ago when Kyle Shanahan came there, was signed right away because Juszczyk said, I need to have a fullback in my offense. Now, Shanahan previously had been working with the Houston Texans, and at the time when he was there, they had my favorite fullback of all time, Vontae Leach. My favorite fullback. This guy was a bruiser, an absolute game changer. He led the way for guys like Arian Foster when he was doing great. Steve Slayton had some good years, and Vontae Leach was a beast. Always had a good fullback. So when you look, you say, all right, well, if we need to run that way, who could we possibly bring in for fullback? There's not that many fullbacks left in the league. The Jets currently have one under contract. It's Trevon Wesco. He's a hybrid fullback, tight end sort of thing. We don't really know where he fits in or what Joe Douglas thinks of him. We know that guys that are drafted usually last 2-3 years if they're in the mid-rounds before getting cut. You know, you got to give them a chance. They're still on a rookie contract. They're not getting paid much. So you keep them around. But this is the time when you'd probably say Trevon Wesco's either got it or he doesn't. If they think Wesco can be a lead block fullback, then great. But if not, that same guy that the 49ers brought in right away when Kyle Shanahan took over is a free agent again. Kyle Juszczyk is a free agent this year. And he's the guy that right away you say, that makes complete sense for the Jets. And if they want to run that style offense that plays a fullback more than any other team in the league, 50% of snaps, Kyle Juszczyk is easily the only guy on the market that is really worth going after. That said, I think it's pretty clear that Kyle Shanahan is going to do what he needs to do to get him back as well, because he realizes that his offense has run through that position and he's going to have to do it. So there could be a bidding war for Juszczyk between the Jets and 49ers, and we'll see what happens. It could raise the price. Perhaps Joe Douglas, who's not known for overspending, will bow out at the last minute, letting him go to the 49ers. But I think that's going to be a guy that we're targeting pretty early. Now moving over to the wide receiver group. A very interesting group, because this is a strong unit. And the Jets, you know, we've been looking for a good wide receiver core for a long time. It feels like every single year we've got an okay core. We're still a star or two away from being really good there, but we've got some young possibilities. And then everybody gets injured, and we end up playing a bunch of no-name guys off the practice squad and further down than that. And it happens year after year. But it feels like now, the way that we've got the offensive line really one piece away, and we're starting to come into our thing, it's like, you know what? I think we're going to be looking at a wide receiver. We drafted Denzel Mims higher than we usually ever draft a wide receiver in recent history. We've got Jameson Crowder under contract for now. We mentioned that we could potentially cut him to save $10 million in the state of the franchise episode. But you need to get another guy in there. And when you look at some big names, my dad mentioned Allen Robinson right away, boom, he jumps off the page. Big name, great to have. Big contract. These guys are going to be $15, $16, $17 million. But these are good players who change your offense. Juju Smith-Schuster, a guy that's been linked to the Jets a lot, probably a couple million dollars less, but could be a great player. Chris Godwin, he's a guy that I really want. I love the way Chris Godwin plays. We saw him shine in the Super Bowl. We've seen him shine. He's still so young. And this guy, he's playing for the Bucs right now. I think he'd love to go back there. I've heard him in a few interviews. He's basically saying, like, he wants to play for the Bucs because they got a good thing going there. They just won a ring. He's having a great time. But at the end of the day, he understands it's a business and he needs to make his money. So when it comes down to it, if the Jets gave him a contract that was just so overwhelming, they probably could get him to leave Tampa Bay and come play for them. The question is, does Joe Douglas want to do that for Chris Godwin? Or are there enough receivers around elsewhere that he would go after somebody else? Kenny Galladay is another guy that will likely get tagged by the Lions, but the Lions are in such disarray, changing coaches and quarterbacks and trades, and their money's a mess, that it's very possible that he's not tagged, and the Jets could potentially go after him. Again, big contract there. Then you take a step down to some other guys. Rashad Perriman of the Jets. If we wanted to bring him back, that would be an easy one. Because you already have him under contract, you could do some negotiations. But I think you could do better. A guy like Corey Davis from the Titans. Will Fuller from the Texans has been linked to us a little bit. Curtis Samuel, sort of jack-of-all-trades athletic guy. Rashard Higgins, somebody who's been buried on the Cleveland Browns depth chart for a long time with a lot of receivers there, but always seems to show up. Those are a bunch of guys that, you know, when you're looking at that back half, you're looking at, you know, Curtis Samuel and Rashard Higgins, those aren't going to change your offense, but they're good pieces to bring in. And I think you would still probably target a wide receiver in the first couple of rounds of the draft if you brought them in, because you'd still be a little weak there. But, you know, they definitely would be serviceable, good players for your offense and young with some potential. If you go with like an Allen Robinson or a Chris Godwin and you decide to overpay, you easily could turn your back on a wide receiver in the first, you know, two, three rounds, and you could go after a depth guy later on. Currently under contract for this group, we've got Denzel Mims, we've got Braxton Berrios, we've got Jameson Crowder. And other than that, the other guys are like, you know, Lawrence Cager and some smaller guys that probably won't be making a big impact with the Jets. So when you look at it right now, without making any cuts, the slot position's probably full. You're looking for an outside guy, maybe that could complement Denzel Mims. Maybe some electric speed down the field, or maybe a really big bruising guy. And so, Will Fuller, he's got that speed. Curtis Samuel, he's got that playmaking ability. Corey Davis, a big guy. And then the stars, Allen Robinson, Juju, Chris Godwin, Galladay. There are options in this group. And there's a very deep wide receiver group in the draft. And so, one way or another, we're going to find a way to improve this group. It's just what kind of contract are the Jets going to be giving out? Who are they going to be going after? I am really looking forward to seeing what happens at wide receiver for the Jets. I can't wait to have, you know, a 1,000-yard receiver again. You know, throw the ball through the air. Maybe a 4,000-yard quarterback for the first time since Joe Namath. Wouldn't that be awesome? I think so. So wide receiver, that's one of the quick ways to get there. And then just getting some weapons. For if it's going to be Sam or it's going to be one of these young rookie quarterbacks, how about having some guys out there that you can throw to where you don't have a Josh Malone or Vincent Smith taking up snaps, like trying to get open. Listen, these guys are good, serviceable players. I understand that they work hard and they had a little bit of impact with the Jets, but when it comes down to it, how about a guy that you can just throw it up to and trust and believe like, well, this guy wins most of his battles and can go up there and get the ball. That's what I'm looking for. Can't wait to see what happens there. So before we move over to the offensive line and the tight end position, which kind of get lumped together as just the front six guys, I'm going to take a quick pit stop at the cooler for a little What's on Tap. That is right, folks. This is What's on Tap. And last week, yeah, I mentioned that I'm trying not to drink very much. And I'm trying to see if I can lose a little bit of weight before the wedding in a year and a half. But I stopped drinking for probably 9 days, and I didn't lose any weight. So I've thrown some of that experiment out the window. We are back today. We are drinking some neat whiskey, Jameson Black Barrel. Oh, I'm a big Jameson guy. I think it's really good. And fiance Shannon, for Christmas, signed me up for what is called Flaviar. It is a booze sampling subscription box that you get sent. Like every 3 months, you get sent a couple vials of samples of a whiskey or whatever you choose. I chose whiskey. And then you get to choose one big bottle from a list of things that they have. And because I like Jameson, and I saw the Jameson Black Barrel on there, I've never had it. I said, let's go with that. So today, a nice two-finger pour in an old-fashioned glass. And it is, I think it's tasty. It's a good sipping whiskey. And when you smell it, it smells just like a really sweet bourbon. And I smelled it first, and I was like, ugh, this just smells like sweet bourbon, and I'm not going to like it because that's not my style. But when you drink it, it tastes like regular Jameson, but a little bit peatier, a little bit smokier, and makes sense. They describe it as twice charred, so it is smokier. It's kind of closer to, like, you know, an Irish whiskey with, like, a little bit of a blend of scotch in there. And it's got a little bit more flavor, so I like it. It's good for sipping. It is a wonderful little treat from my Flaviar box. I am not sponsored by them, but it is tasty, and, yeah, it's nice to be drinking again. It's just good to be back at it, you know what I mean? Those were some tough days, and I was expecting to see a six-pack or something underneath this flab starting to shine, and 9 days, nothing, if you'd believe that. I mean, what's a man got to do? So we will see. Maybe there will be other routes to the body that we need, the beach bod, if you will. Alrighty, so that is What's on Tap this week. Before we move over to the trenches, we got to take a quick commercial break. Okay, welcome back to This is the Jet Life. We are going to talk trenches for the New York Jets, starting with the tight end. The tight end free agency market is okay. Tight end in the draft is okay. There is one elite tight end, Kyle Pitts. Then there's a couple guys like Pat Freiermuth and some people behind him that could potentially be serviceable. But there's only one guy that really moves the needle a ton in the draft. I think that's Kyle Pitts. And other than that, you could say the Jets currently have Trevon Wesco, who's a hybrid fullback tight end, potentially, Ryan Griffin, and Chris Herndon. So potentially you could go in with that unit right now and say, hey, we got our guys. Maybe we bring in one more cheap bench guy or one more late-round pick just to mix in. But you could also say Ryan Griffin could be cut right now, and we could save, I think, about $2 million by cutting him. And perhaps, you know, he had that one good year for us, but then last year didn't really shine much. Perhaps you want to move on and find a better backup or somebody to compete for starting tight end. You could also say that Chris Herndon isn't what we thought he was his rookie year. He's more of what we saw from the beginning of this last 2020 season. There was a point where he was perennial, week after week, doghouse player of the week because he was absolutely blowing it. Now, when you look at Ryan Griffin and you look at Chris Herndon's production, it's very difficult. I think it's similar to Sam Darnold and basically everybody else in this entire team, offense specifically. It's hard to evaluate them off the last 2 years because Adam Gase was so up his own you-know-what that it made no sense what we were doing. It looked like we were not putting people in positions to succeed. We weren't exploiting opponents' weaknesses. We weren't game planning. We weren't making adjustments. And it put a bunch of people in bad positions and made a lot of people look potentially worse than they are. So it's up to our coaching staff, Mike LaFleur, Robert Saleh, and then the front office to decide whether or not they think a guy like Chris Herndon is the player that we thought he was coming out of Miami and then playing for the Jets as a rookie, which is at that point potentially a top 10 tight end in the league. In reality, he looked like he was trending towards that. There are not that many guys that are good at blocking, athletic, good hands, good after the catch. Chris Herndon showed that he was one of those guys early on. That he got suspended, got injured, missed a year. When he came back, he started this year just dropping the ball, fumbling the ball. And it's hard to tell. Is that because he's just not that good at catching and we were fooled early on by a rookie? Or is it because Adam Gase was getting this guy so minimally involved in the offense that he was rusty, he never got in a rhythm, he had no confidence? I mean, you got to think, Chris Herndon was healthy. He was getting thrown the ball two times a game early on in the season. I mean, Chris Herndon should have been an X factor for the Jets going in when he came back healthy. Should have been getting 5 to 7 targets a game, in my opinion. But he wasn't. So is that because of him? Is that because of Gase? That's got to be decided. But I think one way or another, it does make sense to bring in a little bit more insurance, potentially a little bit more than what you get from a Ryan Griffin or a Trevon Wesco. We've seen in the Shanahan offense in San Francisco, we've seen George Kittle shine, and we've seen some other players. Now, there is a former 49er that is potentially going to be available. I believe he's in a restricted free agent. It's Ross Dwelly. He's not a super impactful player, but he's part of the system and potentially could come in as a backup guy if maybe they like him a little more than Ryan Griffin and want to save that $2 million. If you look at the best tight ends on the market right now, you got two guys, Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith. Those are the two best guys. When you look at the 49ers type of offense, they aren't built on it needs to be this, you know, we need to find a guy to play this role, a guy to play this role. They say we want mismatches and we want playmakers. We'll find a way to get it to them. They had Deebo Samuel, but they didn't mind drafting Brandon Ayuk because they're both playmakers and that's great. They love George Kittle. They'll pay him big because he's a mismatch for everybody. You look at Hunter Henry, he's the mismatch. You look at Jonnu Smith, he's the playmaker. Either one of those guys could make sense for the Jets. Do they want to invest and pay $8, $9, $10, $11 million for a tight end when they already have Chris Herndon and Ryan Griffin? That's the real question. But I think that Hunter Henry could start, good blocking mismatch tight end. I think Jonnu Smith could be a great playmaker that could mix in there. But I don't necessarily expect them as much as I expect some other players in positions. If you're looking at some back-end guys other than Ross Dwelly, I think Gerald Everett from the Rams is a guy that hasn't really peaked or become what we thought he could be, but he was supposed to be a super athletic mismatch playmaking tight end, and he's still young enough to potentially be unleashed in another offense. Another guy from the Cardinals, Dan Arnold, who's more of a big-bodied receiving tight end, could be a nice fit for the Jets. Those are some guys that I'm looking at. Moving over to the offensive line, we've got guard, center, and tackle. Now, my dad mentioned interior offensive line is the weakest part of the Jets right now. But because Connor McGovern is under contract and can switch between guard and center, we don't necessarily need one or the other. We could take a center, move McGovern to guard. We could take a guard, keep McGovern at center. Either way, you got to replace that left guard position with either McGovern or somebody else. And then if you move McGovern, you got to replace him, right? So those are the two positions you're looking at. They kind of go together. When you're looking at guard, the group isn't super strong. Joe Tooney, great. He's the guy my dad mentioned. He's the guy to go after. And he did almost have a deal with the Jets. So potentially we can get him first. That would just handle the whole thing. You pay him $17 million a year for 3 or 4 years. Boom, that position's done. Might be a little bit too much to pay for a guard, but it might be what it takes. Another guy to look at, Brandon Scherff. He's getting up there in age. Doesn't always play. Gets injured a little bit. But he's one of the best guards in the league. Could play left guard right away. Offensive line much better. A back end guy that would be... Keep in mind, we were playing Alex Lewis, who needs to be cut, and we were playing Pat Elflein, who was definitely an improvement. A guy like Forrest Lamp from the Chargers is not necessarily the best guard in the league, but he's an absolute improvement over Elflein, an absolute improvement over Alex Lewis. It would potentially be a nice fit next to a guy like Mekhi Becton, who's a big bully. Plus, Forrest Lamp has the funniest name basically ever, and I believe that he promotes and sells Forrest Lamps, which are like wooded, outdoorsy looking lights, you know, with a name like that, you play to your strengths. So Forrest Lamp could be a guy. Right now under contract, we've got Connor McGovern, we've got Greg Van Roten, who's probably going to play right guard and did an all right job. I like him there. You've got Alex Lewis, who needs to be cut. And then you've got who we drafted last year, Cam Clark, who we never really got to see play. And he's a guy that potentially could be a swing guard for us and play as a backup. But there is no way after not playing last year that you can go into the season saying that's going to be your starting left guard. There's no way. That just can't happen. So you either have to draft one or you have to sign one. Those are the guys to look at. Joe Tooney, Brandon Scherff, potentially Forrest Lamp. Those are my first three. Otherwise, you're going for a potential guy who's like got some promise, a younger guy who's like, you haven't heard his name too much, but he had a decent season here or a decent season there. Similar to like when we got Greg Van Roten last year. He wasn't necessarily a great player every single year, but he'd had some promise with Carolina. We could do something like that again. But if you don't want to end up in a situation where you've got an Alex Lewis starting, you thought he was better than he was, and now your offensive line is, you know, jeopardized because one guy can't play the position. The other option is going after center, as my dad mentioned, and moving Connor McGovern over to guard, which is also very possible. And I think the center class is much, much stronger than the guard class. If you can't get Tooney, Scherff, or Lamp, I would rather move over to a center and move Connor McGovern over to guard. The guys, Corey Linsley, maybe the best one from Green Bay. Awesome signing. Matt Skura from Baltimore. He would be awesome. Getting Austin Reeder from Kansas City. That would be a big one. And there are more. There are more guys that can come in and play good center for the Jets. There's like four or five guys that are top 10 centers in the league last year by some grading metrics. And that would definitely be an avenue to go. Now, you definitely need to have some depth. You need to have some depth at center. You need to have some depth at guard. And we don't really know what we're getting from Cam Clark. If you're losing Elflein, you're losing Alex Lewis, you're not sure if Cam Clark can play. Adding in one guy to be a starter, super important. You still probably want to bring in one more guy to play on the back end, similar like, you know, we had Josh Andrews and some other people that were mixing in. You either draft him or you bring him in free agency. So just because you hear the Jets signing a guy who maybe you haven't heard of doesn't mean that he's necessarily slated to be a starter. He could just be part of that, you know, that depth role. We know Joe Douglas is a former offensive lineman, absolutely prioritizes the offensive line, and no question we will be going after a guard or center, interior guy, either early in the draft or with some big money in free agency. And then the offensive line is basically done. Moving over to tackle is the only other thing that you could do here, and we know Becton is, he's your left tackle, no question. Becton is set. Fant is on the other side with Chuma Adoga as your backup swing tackle. Chuma Adoga should not be starting, no, but he definitely can be there as a swing tackle backup. You've also got Connor McDermott under contract. He's a guy that you don't really want to see out there, but if he progresses a little bit, he could move into a solid bench role. Right now, he's like a shaky bench. He could potentially one day be a solid bench guy. Super cheap as well. The question is with Fant, because Fant's contract is designed in a way right now where we could easily cut him. He was kind of a flyer for Joe Douglas, where he was like, listen, Fant has had some good, some bad in Seattle. It's kind of a weird offense. Russell moves a lot. He's been moved from left to right. He was a kind of raw prospect when he came out into the league. And he's super athletic, and with that ability, could he potentially play in this offense? I think what we saw last year is he plays all right. That's about it. He plays all right. He's not a person that you need to replace right now. He is under contract, and he plays okay. It would be tough to find a guy that's better than him. But there are some people that are out there. I think there's two, really, that you just can right now clear-cut say it's worth cutting this guy, bringing them in because they're definitely better. And that is Taylor Moten of Carolina and Darrell Williams of Buffalo. Two right tackles that could come in and would be instant improvements. If it's not one of those two guys, I think you just stay with Fant. I think that you've got him under contract and he played well enough. You know, he's not going to be, you know, an absolute game changer being there. He's not going to move the needle in a positive direction, but he's not going to move it in a negative direction. He was pretty reliable last year overall. He's still athletic, young enough. He's got some ability, and, you know, it's still a position that we probably would look at if we're not super sold on McDermott, or maybe we think that Adoga isn't quite the depth swing piece we thought he was. It's another position that we could tackle as a project position in the draft. I wouldn't be surprised, but, you know, for starters, which is what really is going to make a big difference for this team if everybody's healthy, is Fant going to be replaced by Taylor Moten or Darrell Williams? We'll see. We'll see. Those guys are going to be expensive, and, you know, you'd save $10 million or so cutting Fant. You'd spend $17 million or so signing those guys, maybe 14 or 15. So, you know, you net minus $5 million and improve your right tackle position by, you know, 20%. Joe Douglas loves the offensive line. Don't put it past him. You got this new offense. If you had a great offensive line, I'm going to do this real quick. Like, if you had a great offensive line, Becton's there, McGovern's playing, I think Van Roten can be there. If you have an awesome right tackle, Penei Sewell from the draft, or Taylor Moten or Darrell Williams, and then you bring in like a Joe Tooney at left guard, and you've got them playing for 16 games, best offensive line in the league, whoever plays quarterback, Sam Darnold or whoever, is going to look good. And whoever is calling the plays is going to look damn good. It's going to be a good offense because there's enough creativity in this offense. We have enough playmakers right now, and we're going to be adding more. And with an offensive line like that, it'd be dangerous. We'll see just how much Joe Douglas wants to invest in that one position group. We know he loves it, but how much? So that's the offense. We looked at quarterback, running back, fullback, wide receiver, tight end, interior offensive line, and tackle. And we've got a pretty good game plan for what the Jets could do and some players to look at. Now, of course, there are plenty of other players that are going to be free agents that the Jets have been scouting. Some I'm interested in, just didn't have time to mention. Some I don't know all that well. Other guys I'm just not big fans of. But it's up to this Jets front office. We've established a really good team here, what we think is a really good team, at evaluating players, drafting, giving out contracts. It's going to be an exciting time for us. Keep in mind, we have the second most salary cap space in the NFL as it stands. We're in position to make a lot more if we want by cutting some players. And when this thing opens up, March 15th, the legal tampering period begins, it's going to be craziness, as it always is. Now, don't get disheartened if at first Joe Douglas is a little quiet and it's just smaller deals. Little things here, one-year deal, two-year deal, smaller player, like a backup this. That's what we're doing when everybody else is signing big-name guys and they're all disappearing? Because that was Joe Douglas's MO last year when this all went down. We didn't make big moves. We signed a couple guys quietly later in free agency, like Connor McGovern, who, by the way, was a great signing. Who was like, that's one of the guys to go after. We did end up getting him. It just took a little while. And then he filled in Brian Poole, Jordan Jenkins, Pierre Desir, a bunch of one-year deals for guys with really small contracts that did not hurt us and left us in a position to have $75 million this year. And having a lot of money at your disposal is extremely important. More in the future, probably, than it is now. Like, yes, it's exciting right now. You look at it and you're like, we could buy all sorts of good players and maybe be an okay team. But the best thing that you could possibly do is get a good team together, a really good team that's cheap and young, and then say, you know what, we're ready to make the push. We've got the money. Let's sign those three missing holes that we've identified. Instead of having like 15 holes and being like, well, I guess we could sign this guy. I guess we could sign them. What if you filled most of your holes? You only have a couple left, and you just spend that big money that you've saved on those. That's the best way to do it. And I still think that it's possible that Joe Douglas could take a very casual, tentative approach, even though we have all the money. Try to get some rollover. Try to make sure he's got his bases covered. Get some guys in here. Maybe get 3-4 core players. But don't go too much crazier than that. So don't be disheartened. It would all be part of the plan. And if he starts going crazy and giving out big contracts and saying, let's get the wide receiver, let's get the O-lineman, let's get the cornerback and the pass rusher, and he spends all the money, then we're going to have a lot more fun this year, a lot faster. It just wouldn't be built as organically and as naturally. And from what I've seen, Joe Douglas seems like a patient, wait-and-see, organic type of GM. And I'm here for it. I'm here for it. 2021 is not the Jets' year to win the Super Bowl, but the way that it's being built right now, 2023 easily could be. And I will hold on to hope for that, whether it's Sam Darnold, Deshaun Watson, one of these rookies. I don't know. But I believe in Joe Douglas and what he's doing, just like my dad. And I think a lot of fans agree that Joe Douglas is putting together something pretty special. We got Robert Saleh here, the guy we wanted from the very start, the guy everybody wanted. Robert Saleh, he's here. Joe Douglas is the reason why. And it's just starting. This whole thing is just starting. So next time I'm back here, March 16th will be Tuesday in 2 weeks. It'll be smack dab in the middle of the legal tampering period. We will be talking about the stuff that's happening on the fly as it's going down, contracts that are being signed. We'll be talking about what the Jets are doing, what kind of approach. Is Joe Douglas doing the wait and see, or did he go out there and say, this is my guy, let's go get him, the minute legal tampering began? If you're looking for more thoughts as this stuff is going down, follow me on Twitter at Jets_Dan. I'll be doing some breakdowns of the guys that we're signing, whether I'm for it, against it, why we signed them, all that good stuff. And I can't wait. It's it. We hit it. We got to free agency. We spent so many months and so much time. I mean, especially with the season being so stinky, it was like we spent so much time just thinking, I can't wait for next season to begin. Next season's our year. And this is the start of it all. In 3 weeks, we're basically going to have our team set minus our draft picks. And at that point, we're going to know, all right, if we sign to this guy, then that means our draft is going to be more focused here. It's going to propel everything moving forward, and we can begin this season with some new hope, some new excitement, and it's going to be awesome. So thank you for joining me. I will see you guys back here in 2 weeks, March 16th, for the free agency update. I'm Dan Burnham, and this is The Jet Life.